Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know, if you were doing a scene and he was like, he kind of look at you and be like, I didn't really believe that. Maybe you should go again, or like, I liked it the other way. I liked it the first time.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by Jonathan Watkins of CinemaSins.
Hello, hello.
Today we have a very special guest. It is Neve Alger from The Shadow of Violence, a movie that it came out just this past weekend, right?
That's correct. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on here and talking with us. It's very interesting. We've done enough of these now where I'm starting to get connections and everything. And we talked to director Lorcan Finnegan a few months ago.
Yes.
we were doing an interview for his movie Vivarium, but watched the movie without name just before
there
that. And you were in that movie. What was that experience like?
Well, Without Name was actually one of my first films.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's what got me my agent in London. And it took me to Toronto Film Festival and London Film Festival. And it was after that that I signed with Independent in London. And yeah, so yeah, it was Lorcan Finnegan that really supported me. But it was a really fun job. Like we were in the middle of literally the Dublin mountains in Ireland, shooting in like this incredible scenery. And that's a world, like the you know, it's a film that just, you know, explores natural narcotics and the effects of that on your psychological state. And so just to kind of explore those ideas of the psyche was really interesting.
Yeah, that movie's just a mood. I don't mean to say that in the modern way that it's meant usually, but it really is. It's a movie that you watch and just, I don't know, just let yourself soak into it is basically what it is.
It definitely teleports you inside what would feel like someone's brain if they had taken all the mushrooms in the world.
Yeah, and he does. that looks like a beautiful place where you shot that.
Yeah, and actually that was, funny enough, Piers McGrail, who was the cinematographer on The Shadow of Violence, also
really?
Shot Without Name. Yeah, so I've actually worked with Piers a few times.
Oh, that's so awesome. And I've seen you in one other movie. It was called From the Dark. And maybe it's a testament to your performance in that movie, or maybe it's just the effects or the costumes, but it looks like you went through some stuff when you made that.
I did. Went through a lot of stuff.
please tell me all the stuff you went through. Tell me if that was as hard as it looked.
You know what? That film, doing From the Dark, has really set me up as regards how far I can push myself physically, because it was 4 weeks of nights. Mm-hmm. And we shot it in the hottest summer in Ireland, and if you can imagine, that's probably about 28 degrees. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, which isn't that hot, but for us it was like, you know, we were in the tropical climate. And you get about 6 hours of darkness, so we'd like rehearse and then try and shoot it. But but yeah, it was really fun. It was working with a really great Connor McMahon, that's his genre that he completely takes ownership of. And yeah, it was like, it was a lot of running around. There was a lot of like crawling through tight spaces in muck. But yeah, it's like just pure play, you know.
Did you actually have a spider crawl across your face, or was
I
that
did.
Like
that was real? Like that was real, but that happened organically in that scene because
we were
shooting. I don't know what you, like are they called? It's like a daddy long legs, one of those spiders.
Yeah.
And it was in the corner frame of the shot, and Connor was like, "Oh man, wouldn't it be cool if it like crawled across you?" And then as he was kind of saying that and thinking it happened.
It's a tense scene because you have to like not make noise and you know, and this thing crawls across you. It just comes out of nowhere and then it's like on your face and then you're like, oh, my yeah. God, don't scream. Don't scream. Yeah, so the movie The Shadow of Violence has come out. Now is it called that around the world or is it Calm with Horses everywhere else?
I believe it's just in the US it's called The Shadow of Violence and it's called Calm with Horses. It came out in the UK and Ireland first. It was premiered as Calm with Horses. It was based off of a novella by an Irish writer called Colin Barish under the same title, Calm with Horses.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why it got changed when it came here, because Calm with Horses is going to sound like it's the Horse Whisperer Part 2 or something like that.
People were like really into like equine, like, yeah, homeopath, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it's still the exact same film.
Yeah.
It's just, you know what I mean?
But when you watch the movie, knowing that is a title for it, it makes perfect sense why it's called that. Especially when you get to the scene, obviously, with the horses eventually.
Yeah, eventually.
I thought that was actually a very cool title, which they kept that here.
Yeah, because then you could have the opposite hand of that, and you might have a load of people who are really into horses, and they go to see the film, and they think it's going to be all about horses, and it's not.
So I was wondering, what did you do to prepare for this character? Because it's a mother of a kid who has special needs. And I was wondering if you did any sort of research or did you just kind of, what did you do?
This is the usual. It's, going through the script and figuring out why, you know, what brought these two characters, Ursula and an arm played by Cosmo Jarvis together. And then also the fact that she has, puts all her focus and her drive into concentrating on her boy, Jack, who he's nonverbal. He can't communicate what feels like the outside world. And because of that, they have become kind of closed off from the rest of the town. And what she wants to do is to, take him away and give him the opportunities so that his care, his needs are kind of cared for. When you break it down, it's for me, the most important thing was building a connection with Killian, who plays Jack. And Killian does not have special needs. He's a great actor.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. So
this was his first movie, correct?
This was his first movie, correct. Yeah. Nick Rowland discovered him and... Yeah, I think it's just you. It's like anything. You want to build a trust there with actors, and we got that opportunity. We got like a couple of weeks, in this small town in Ireland. I'd been living in London at the time, so I flew back, and I spent a couple of weeks working with Killian and also speaking with Autism Ireland, basically just about the getting kind of like a broader sense of kind of resources that would be available to people if they were, say, for example, they are in a rural area. And through that, I discovered this girl who was very similar to Ursula. She came from a single parent household, and she told me of the struggles that she faced, both emotionally and I suppose just on a sense of like how she dealt with relationships and how she felt, judged through her friends. So that was, like, I took kind of bits from that, and then, but it was mostly just the, Colin Barrett, who wrote the novella, and then Joe Murtha, he has this incredible script. So and in those short scenes that you see with Ursula and Arm, you immediately know kind of he's able to like capture just this drive and the strength in this woman who never loses focus. And he was able to do that in such a clear and concise way. And all of the subtext between those two characters is said in the silences. And I think that's what I really loved. And I love the idea of exploring that with Cosmo, because I know him as an actor, he's very generous and he gives a lot, which was great.
Cosmo Jarvis is new to me. He's in a couple of movies that I have heard of, but I haven't seen. But he's incredible in this, and he's definitely got a star quality. I can already tell you enjoyed working with him. But how was it like working with this guy?
Cosmo was great. I'd seen him previously. I think it was about 6 months beforehand in Florence Pugh's first film, which was Lady Macbeth.
And, right.
Well, I don't think it was the first one, but that was, I was like, I saw it and I was like, who is this guy? You know, he's incredibly present as a person. And I think that transcends into his acting. And like I mentioned before, he's a giving actor. And what I mean in that sense is that he would give you everything and he'll push, like we kind of had this incredible bond as people as well, that we knew how to like push each other emotionally in scenes and not feel like you were ever crossing the line. And if we were, it was, you know, you were, you know, there's the trust there in one another. And you know, he brought this thing, like when I first met him, was in the casting room, and it was what he'd done with the character surpassed any expectation of what I saw as Arm. You know, he brought this incredible vulnerability, but also it's like a broken guard. You know, he's a character that wore a lot of scars on the outside, and just so no one can see what's kind of deep under that. And yeah, so that was, it's just when you get to work with great people, it only pushes you to be better.
Yeah, he reminds me a little bit of Tom Hardy a little bit.
Yeah.
In this. The ability to have this imposing kind of figure, but at the same time, you can see some of the sweetheart in him at the same time. Although I will say, in one scene where he is coked out of his mind and has been drinking, and he talks to you and your new boyfriend, I was sitting there, I was scared for your character, but I could see on your face, in your character's face, she wasn't. And it sort of gave me some calm during that scene, but I was sitting there thinking the worst was going to happen. And, looks like, you know, I don't know if this was all sort of discussed beforehand, but I really felt like there was something about to happen in that scene. But just looking at your face in that whole thing, sort of like, I don't know, it gave me either a sense of calm or a false sense of calm during it.
I agree. Yeah. You both just felt like two people that had known each other for a long time, and, you know, and had, you know, maybe off and on again relationship or whatever, had the kid, you know, it felt very real to life. The chemistry and everything.
Thank you. You know, I always saw Ursula as a, you know, she is a structure of stability for Arm. So I always saw her as like a diffuser. You know, she's put in these situations in order to try and diffuse and deflect away from the violence. And it's like a choice that she's made, because ultimately when she, you know, she turns up at the Devers house, she has chosen not to kind of go to that level of violence, you know. Ursula is someone who understands and knows this character, or knows him inside and out. And I think they've seen each other at their worst. And I think there's that love. And when there's a love between the two characters, it's either going to like push it. You don't know which way it's going to be pushed. But I really, when I read that scene, I really loved it, because you don't know what he's going to do.
yeah. Because he has been set up as this bruiser. At the same time, we have only seen him do it on command. We haven't seen him do it out of emotion and everything. Mm. But that scene has a tension to it And I, you know, it's one of those things, like I said, I thought it was just watching your expression as he questioned a little bit harder about everything. I was like, oh, well, maybe this is, but then I was like, well, maybe this is a false sense of security. Maybe the real bad stuff's about to happen and I'm just being lulled into it and everything. But I love that type of detail in your expression there, because if you did look worried or anything like that, and the rest of the movie played out the way it did, then I don't think it would have been very true to that character at all.
But
you have a difficult job in this movie, I think, because a lot of what an audience member expects from your, well, a lot of what an audience member judges of your character is based on Arm and his buddies and everything. Because right off the bat, when we're introduced to your character, she says, she needs money and she needs this money to put her kid through a special school. And first thing that his buddy that is it Barry Keoghan?
Barry Keoghan.
Keoghan.
There's another Irish name. We just
Keoghan. Like, oh yeah, there it is. There Keoghan. That Keoghan. I should have seen Keoghan. It. Keoghan.
Keoghan.
Did I not get it right again?
No.
I'll never get it right then. He plays his buddy immediately says, you know, a woman like that is just looking out, is just trying to clean you dry and everything. And immediately you start as an audience member, you're thinking, well, maybe she is one of those type of characters. And you start distrusting everything that she does. You see that character through Arm's eyes and everything. So I feel like that's kind of a tough job for you to pull off, right?
Well, yeah, that, like what you said is like, I never judge the character. And so for me, for when, you know, she's trying to ask for money and she's doing it for the benefit of her kid, it's not because, you know, I think that is like, for her, she hates the fact that she has to ask him for money. You know, if Ursula could be independent of that, she would have left, I think, a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that the idea of that, basing it off the idea that she never wanted to be in that situation where she owes anyone anything. And that's exactly what, where Arm finds himself, is he becomes just the lapdog to this family. And it's the complete opposite of Ursula. So there's, you know, he has this as you said, like this physical strength, and for Ursula it's more of an emotional strength. And I think that was like, for me, it was like not trying to play the stereotyped whingy girlfriend who is just after, you know, the guy's money. Makes sense.
Yeah. You know, because that it is easy to think that, but this character always, you know, Ursula always sort of surprises us in this movie. That's one of the things that I like about this. It's easy, I think, for a character like this to sort of just be kind of the in the background, you know, this is what represents Arm's life before he turned to crime, and that's it. But Ursula seems way more than that. And, you know, it's a testament to your performance in this, that she is more than just that.
Thanks.
What else do we want to say about this movie, Jonathan?
Well, I was just going to actually just coming up, kind of going off of what you were saying. I think that's the thing that a lot of people are going to get out of this movie, right? Is that you kind of like, if you've seen a lot of movies, you kind of feel like you know where it's going, and then it just completely, you know, does a 180 on you, or just, you know, takes a sharp left turn in a different direction. And I think a lot of that has to do with specifically your character, the character of Ursula. Because of all the things Chris is saying, I did want to ask about, so Killian who played Jack. Okay.
Yeah.
So this was his first movie. It didn't seem like it was though. I mean, he just seems like a natural.
Yeah, he was the most professional on set, to be honest. And he was 5 years old. Yeah, and it's like the best thing about Killian is that like he would pull you up on things that you got wrong. So he really kept us on our toes. Or if it was a scene, you know, if you were doing a scene and he was like, he'd kind of look at you and be like, I didn't really believe that. Maybe you should go again. Or like, I liked it the other way. I liked it the first time. You know, it makes me, but he, like, because it's an emotional film and the scenes are quite heavy and intense. And it was important. I felt it was like as me, because I have nieces and nephews who are like his age. So it was kind of important to make sure that he was fully aware of the fact that what we were saying was our characters and it's not how we feel as people. And it, like, you know, between takes, we'd all play football or, you know, tell silly jokes. And he, you know, he'd turn it on for the whole scene and then immediately turn it off. And it's really refreshing to work with a kid who doesn't care how he did the last take, and he's more focused on the fact that you didn't hit your mark.
It's amazing.
He should be fine then.
Yeah, he will be fine.
Was his performance based in some research on his own? Like, did someone introduce him to a bunch of kids that he needed to sort of emulate or study, or was just sort of a direction that he was given?
It was more through direction, and Nick Rowland, the director, had kind of created this language that Killian had in order to communicate how he reacted to certain things. And noise was a massive thing for him, like the idea that, you know, Jack doesn't like loud noises. And I think it was, you know, Nick reminded him of that, and, you know, he worked through a lot of movement and sound, and it was Nick and Killian had their own dialogue of how they constructed scenes, which was, you know, for a five-year-old to be able to do is incredible.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What was your favorite scene to work in this? You have a couple of great standout scenes. I personally love the scene where you're yelling at the other Devers women, or woman. In that, I loved that a lot. But what were some of your favorites, and what sort of take us through your process on those?
I think it was actually probably that scene. We shot it quite early on due to locations, so it wasn't in sequence. But I knew that, obviously from studying the script, that was quite a pivotal scene for Ursula's character, but most importantly for Cosmo's character, because this is like essentially the last time they see each other. And it's that idea of where Ursula's strengths lie. You know, she is as flawed as any of the other characters in the story. It's just which she chooses to carry around with her. And ultimately in that scene, when she's confronted by Simone Kirby's character of June, who's, you know, the female head of the Devers household. And it's just in a line, it's just like, your boy is the way he is because of you. And it's the, you know, for Ursula in that moment, she's fighting against just the audacity of the ignorance that's implied in that sentence, and also the fear of people actually thinking that that is the case. And I think Ursula is conflicted in how she is going to channel both her emotions in that bit where, you know, if she could literally, for her, it's like, you know, lunge forward and go for her, but it's trying to contain all that and walk away. And essentially what she does is trying to walk away. And there was a lot of things happening in that scene with characters all in, you know, bringing a lot to just one moment. It's like a crossroads, really. But then also it's a scene with the arm on the phone, and I'm on the phone to arm, and it's at the end of the film, which right. was really it was just wonderful to watch, because I was in the room with Cosmo when he did it. So, you know, we didn't do it in an ADR session. It was all done live, so I was hiding behind a curtain.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
I was too. That was one of my questions for you, because when you were doing your session, was he in the room with you when you were doing your lines, or
no? So they were able to record the audio there and then. Yeah. So they built
very cool.
Yeah, they built like out of soft furnishings in that house, kind of in the same room, like a sound booth, and yeah. So I could hear him. And he could obviously hear me, but it wasn't over the phone. I think it's important. We both needed to be able to hear each other, even though Ursula is on a completely different page to what he's going through. And you know, it's one entire take, and Cosmo is phenomenal at it.
I was watching that scene though, just I wasn't mad at Ursula, but I was just sitting there thinking, like, why can't you tell that something's going on with him? Like, don't say bye. Do not say bye. But that's how effective, that shows you how effective the scene is, right?
Yeah.
You know, because you're so into it.
Watching Netflix and just Ben and Jerry, she's just oblivious to it all.
Yeah, that's one of those things. That scene is so great because it's, you know, I believe it's one static shot throughout, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wish more directors implemented this. It's amazing how much one static shot can get you involved into a scene. You can cut back to the other person. But there's something that's lost from cutting back and forth in that, because you want to see this person in this state, in this particular conversation. You want to see him the whole way, and it's just something that really draws you in, and it's a great work all around from everybody on that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like he earned it at that stage in order to have this 4.5 minute, tracking shot. Mm-hmm. And also I think there's so much, like, you watch a lot of kind of contemporary action films now, and there's so many cuts that you know what I mean? I think he was like, you only need to cut if you don't stay with it. And it's like, it's kind of reintroducing the discipline of actually just watching and listening and everything. There's so much, it's so still, and there's so much happening in that scene, especially kind of leading up to that. There's so much pacing and switch between scenes and characters that once you're just kind of forced to sit still, it's a bit of a roller coaster of emotion in that scene, really.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many times that I watch something and, you know, it's just two people talking and you're like, wow, this conversation has been going on for a while. And then you look at the time and it's like, you know, 15 minutes has gone by and you're like, whoa, where did the time go? I've been completely engrossed in this the whole time.
There's an amazing, Have you seen Hunger, Stephen Queen's Hunger?
I have not seen that.
If you haven't, you should check it out. It's incredible. But there's a scene between Michael Fassbender, who was one of the
I have seen that. I saw it on. It was on Mubi. I saw this, and there was there's like a 17-minute uncut
17-minute scene between him and Liam Cunningham.
Yes, I have seen this,
and that is like, because I met Liam recently at a and I was just had to ask him about that scene, and I think they spent weeks, you know, rehearsing in like a flat in London before they went and shot it. But 17 minutes, and it stays the entire time just on a two shot. It's amazing. Yeah, and you don't, it's only after a while that you begin to realize, it's like, wow, this has been a really long scene. But if you don't notice it for the first like couple of minutes, the story is doing its job, you know.
I had completely forgotten the name of that movie, and I was thinking of that scene when I was talking about this. It's amazing, because I remember going, okay, they're talking. And then you're like, man, I'm just so engrossed. You don't even think you're watching a movie anymore. You're just kind of there with them at some point. And then about 12 to 13 minutes into it, I was like, whoa, has this been just the whole time? It's been on this one shot, and it's just amazing. What else do you have on what's coming up for you? What's some other stuff that you're about to get into that you can talk about?
I can talk slightly about a series I did with Ridley Scott. It's his first television adventure. It's gonna be out later in the year with HBO Max, which you guys have obviously in the States, but this side of the pond, I don't think HBO Max has launched yet. But it's a sci-fi, obviously, it's Ridley Scott. It's two androids that are tasked with raising humans on a virgin planet. And yes, Sir Ridley Scott has ventured into the world of television, and I think he's done an incredible job, obviously.
this is Raised by Wolves.
This is Raised by Wolves, yes.
Okay.
I'm definitely looking forward to that. I remember hearing that announced. I believe Cosmo's in that as well, right?
Oh yeah, he is. He so is. I hadn't seen Cosmo since we shot Camp with Horses, and so it was only like a couple of months later, but I'd already been, Raised by Wolves in Cape Town in South Africa. And Cosmo stayed in character. It's not considered in character. He stayed in accent for The Shadow of Violence while we were filming. So Cosmo was from Devon in the UK, but he did a flawless West of Ireland accent, which is, believe me, it's very different. So I'm in South Africa, and then all of a sudden this English lad is like chatting away to me in the makeup chair, and I'm perplexed because I'd never heard his actual real accent before. And then he plays American, obviously, in the show. But Cosmo's in it. Yeah, he's fantastic. Amazing. Yeah.
And then, have you already shot the new Guy Ritchie movie? Has that been?
Yes,
has that been shot yet?
That's been shot. That should be out. See, I don't know when anything's going to be out because of.
I don't think any of us do at this point.
No, so I'm being so vague.
But yeah, I didn't know if you could talk, but this is a Cash Truck, right? Is that, I believe that's the title.
Yeah, it was, currently Cash Truck. So Jason Statham and Guy Ritchie have teamed back up again.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And then I was curious about this. I think it's a show. I just wrote it down. I forgot to list if it was a show or movie, but it's called Censor.
It's a movie.
Okay. Yeah. It sounded really interesting. Is that something that's in the can as well? Or
yeah, we literally finished because we got caught with obviously COVID. The shoot kind of, it had another week to go, so we just wrapped on Friday. Officially. Hmm. Yeah. I've been back to work in the new, you know, COVID kind of procedural set, which is great. Everything just takes a little bit longer. But it was great to get back to work. And Prano Bailey Bond, who's the director on it, this is her debut feature film. Yeah. It's a feature that is set in the early 80s in London, about a film censor. So a censor who, you know, decides whether or not a film is certified to be viewed by the public, or if it is, it has to, you know, you have to cut out a certain amount of violence or nudity or wording. And so this censor, Enid Bain, she sees this one particular film that has this quite a profound effects mentally on her, and she kind of goes down through a spiral of her kind of like a schizophrenic adventure, one might say, in discovering what it is this film means to her.
Yeah, I love mysteries set around like lost movies and stuff like that. I kind of felt like when I was reading the description, and you saying it's in the 80s makes more sense now, because in the IMDb description it says specifically video nasty, which is not something I've heard in, you know, like 30 plus years. So
yeah, I think it's going to be an education for a lot of people about that entire world. Because I remember there was like someone had said to me, it was like, oh yeah, so you like that's DVD land. I was like, you know, that's when you had DVDs. I was like, no, that's like VHSs. Like what? Tapes and it, like, yeah. So it was like the set design and everything is incredible.
Yeah.
And the entire look of the film, they shot it on film, and it aesthetically, it's really surpassed anything that I had like expected from the script.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Yeah, that sounded really cool. I can't wait to see that. And I don't know if it really gets into like the whole video nasty stuff, but
it does. It does indeed. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Because that's something I don't think a lot of people here know about, because they just show everything here. So we didn't have stuff because it's like, and people think it's like just like, you know, cannibal movies and stuff, but it's even stuff like Child's Play and, you know, movies that I think now would be considered pretty tame.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like it was because, you know, Thatcher banned a lot of movies because she thought it was to do with public violence and how it was affecting society and I suppose it's kind of like what we went through a couple of years ago and probably still are now with video games and people linking that with violence.
Yeah, I had never heard of this myself, so I'm gonna have to look this up. But all these new projects sound very intriguing. You briefly mentioned, working with Ridley Scott. How was that like? What was that like? Did you work on the ones that he actually directed, or was he there the whole time? Or
So Ridley, you know, he set up the entire visual tone and of the show. So he directed episode 1 and 2 and oversaw the other 8 episodes. So to work with Ridley was surreal. Like, that was because before, like, we had a chat about the character, but he very much he sets it up for it's the best playground for an actor, because everything you pick up is functioning, obviously not a gun, but like there's very little green screen, and the costume and everything is like, it's been, you can tell that he's known to have this incredible eye, but like to work on that, you really see just how good he is. He paints a frame like he's an artist. You know, like, and he sees beauty in the most ordinary things, like in buildings or industrial structures. They almost become like a painting. And for this, it's just like that. It's visually, it's very stunning. He moves really quickly. You know. He knows exactly what he wants, and he knows how to communicate it in a very brief way, and so he's not kind of overthinking anything. And obviously, the guy has got, you know, 60 plus years of experience. He knows how to direct.
I believe he moves quickly, because I feel like he releases a movie like every year, or at least every other year.
I think he does, actually. That's not far from the truth, and it's especially. That period of time between like 2000 and like, it was like the 10-year period there where he's coming out with not only one, but sometimes 2 movies in a year and everything. So I believe that working fast thing. And of course, as far as his eye is concerned, yes, almost everything he comes out with looks beautiful.
Yeah. He's got like, you know, he's always got like 10 things on the go, And
yeah,
I don't know where he gets his energy from. It's addictive, to be honest. That, like, that you get this energy where you, I don't know, you just want to, we want to bottle that energy. Because he went boxing as well in the evenings. He used to go down to the go to the gym and go boxing. Like, he put people who were like a third of his age to shame. Like, we were all,
it's crazy,
so tired from like a day's filming. And then, like, Ridley's heading off to either location scout another place, and possibly he's probably going to go boxing. He gets up at like 5 a.m. and goes boxing, and you know, he draws everything. Like, when we were, you know, when in pre-production going onto the show, we got like, you know, obviously you get the, like, the treatment of what, you know, a show is going to, what they're aiming for. But for this, it was, everything was hand-drawn, that he had drawn everything of what the world is going to look like and what the planet's going to look like, what your character, the costume will look like. And so, yeah, it was phenomenal to just see that, and just to see his scale of that where his imagination can go.
Yeah, I would like to just be like on the set, just observing that. More, you know, like it's got to be amazing for an actor to be able to hang out with that guy and pick his brain and everything.
Yeah, because there's probably only like a handful of directors that have had the kind of longevity that he's had and success throughout that longevity. I mean, you think about like Hitchcock, you know, I mean, and I guess, you know, but even like somebody like, I mean, I think it's even bigger than somebody like Spielberg, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah. Like, it was gave me goosebumps, because we were talking about like Alien. Alien is like one of my favorite films. So I was just like asking questions just about that. And it was just a bit mind blowing. I mean, it's like having these conversations with Ridley Scott about Sigourney Weaver and then Luke Scott, Ridley's son, he directed a few of the episodes as well. And like, oh, Luke is incredible. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
Wow.
That's a talented family.
It is. Yeah.
The late Tony as well. So yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy how talented they all are.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Thanks to Niamh Algar. And you know what, someday I'll learn all these Irish idiosyncrasies.
Oh, good luck.
so you're saying you're still learning?
I am still learning. Like, there's one Irish name, like Quiva. And like, if you just look up the name, you can't even know, because I'm going to have to spell it for you. It's C-A-I-O-M-H-E.
Mm-hmm.
And it's spelled nothing like it said. But I don't know. I think that's what makes the Irish names really fun, is that you just sit and watch people panic as they read your name.
Yeah.
And you look at them like that's not it. But that's fine.
Well, it was very, very easy when we first saw the name to go, that's Niam. It's Niam.
Niam. Yeah.
But yeah, we've talked to you know, Lorcan Finnegan, we've talked to Niasa Hardiman, and every time it's an education about certain things. She put so much stuff into her Sea Fever movie that had all these you know, these Irish flavor to it, and you know, you get to the name and you're like, okay, gonna do my best, we'll see what happens. So I'd like to thank Niamh Algar for showing up here and talking about The Shadow of Violence. I believe it's Calm with Horses everywhere else, probably, except here in America it's The Shadow of Violence, because hey, you gotta have the word violence in there, you know, entice the people. But thank you for showing up. It's been great talking to you.
It was lovely talking to you guys. Thank you for having me on.
That'll do it for this interview. It's Chris Atkinson and Jonathan Watkins. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.